second, India have won the test match. India have won the series. They're going to get back for two. India at home. Lords goes wild.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the 81 All Out podcast. This is Siddhartha Vaidyanathan at SidV on Twitter. And I'm joined today by three guests. First, I'd like to introduce you to Mithun Subramanian. He's a marketing professional based in Singapore who was fortunate enough to be at the stands at Old Trafford for the India-New Zealand semi-final. Hi, Mithun.
Hey, Sid. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and we also have 81 All Out regulars, Subhash Jayaraman at the Cricket Couch. Hey, Subhash.
What's up, Sid? How are you?
Good. And Ashoka at AB Van on Twitter. Hi, Ashok.
Hi, man.
Hi. So let's start with Mithun at the stands. I guess you're back now to your hotel room. How was it attending the a two-day one-dayer? Was it the first time you had been in US?
Yeah, most definitely. I was just thinking about what to say a little bit earlier. And one of the things that came across my mind was I'm from Chennai originally. So in the early 2000s, Madras had a ton of matches that kept getting rained off where there was no match the next day. So this one was actually slightly different where we the crowd came in, everybody was anxious. There was so much calculation going around on what was happening. And funny enough, I was relying more on my friends outside of the stadium through WhatsApp to tell me what's happening than actually within the stadium because there were no live Duckworth Lewis updates that were happening there. So I was relying either on Crickinfo, Crickbuzz, or my friends outside to know what's happening. But it's interesting. The match was very different from what I was expecting, to say the least. The first day started off pretty good for India, I think, the first 20-odd overs, and then kept getting a little bit more tense as Ross Taylor and Kane Williams got their partnership together. And then towards the end, the last five overs, you could see that New Zealand were poised to start hitting a little bit, and then the rain came down. Rest of the day was just waiting to see what was happening. Are we going to get a few balls in? Towards the last, hour and a half, the entire crowd was just hoping that they would call it soon, because the more they kept delaying it, the more painful it was getting for the crowd. Also, given the fact that most of the folks were India fans, it just kept prolonging the agony, because a 20-over match at that point of time would have been slightly difficult.
And so talk a bit about the crowd. So yesterday, especially in the first half, it seemed quite packed, and India fans were obviously, like in most India games this tournament, they were in overwhelming numbers. Today, there seemed to be a bit of spaces and gaps, but that seemed to change as the game moved along.
No, absolutely. So yesterday was pretty packed. I actually got stuck in traffic on the way in. So I missed the first over and the first DRS review. The stadium was pretty full yesterday. There were gaps on and off. We were talking amongst ourselves about whether, those gaps were because people were just coming in late or what. But then within the first hour and a half, it was probably 95% full. Today, on the other hand, we were there ahead of time. Stadium was probably 50-60% full in the beginning, but within a couple of hours, it got pretty much full. It is about 80-85%.
So where were you sitting in the stadium? I mean, which stand? Or...
Yeah, I was sitting right behind Long On, right beside the brick pavilion. So Old Trafford is kind of an interesting ground because there's two massive structures on both sides as opposed to the one usually. And even on one side, there's a hotel. I think it's a Hilton that has the Long Off side, while the brick structure has the Long On side. I was sitting right beside that. So I was right behind where Long On would have been for right-hand batsmen.
So for a reference, where would you have been with reference to Martin Guptill when he got the
run out.
Ah, so I was actually I was while Dhoni was taking the second run, I think Guptil came in from square of the wicket. So he while he was, I couldn't see clearly whether he had hit it straight or whether the fielder had collected the ball, because it is at that angle. But the way everybody reacted, the way the crowd reacted, the way people reacted, the way I was having one of these earpieces which was giving out commentary as well. So the way the commentators were reacting, I could see, I could sense that this was probably not an easy run. So it was one of those moments where from the stands, I couldn't make out whether Dhoni had made it or not. But because of just the reactions around, I had a bad feeling about it.
Tell us a bit about the atmosphere. I mean, I must tell our listeners that Mithun is... been a diehard CSK fan for ever since the IPL began. So, two CSK batsmen at the crease. You had some connections there. And tell us about the crowd when Jadeja and Dhoni were having that partnership.
Yeah, so I'll leave the CSK bit out for a minute. I'll get to that in a second. But you know, one of the things was when Pant and Pandya were actually middling the ball reasonably well, and they were playing. I was telling people around me, and we were kind of talking about, you know, this is trial by fire. He's, after all, a 21-year-old kid. How is he going to be responding? And Pant, you know, kudos to him. He was not too flashy at all from what we could see. But that Santner over to Pandya, I think it is a maiden over, Santner's first over. That happened, and then when Santner was coming back, you could just see that Pant was itching, right? So that was kind of, I don't know if you can call it the impertinence of youth or what, but you could see Pant was itching to have a go. And once he holed out, and then later Pandya went, you could see the slight change in dynamic that happened between those two guys and what Dhoni and Jaddu were doing. And I felt, I think there was one over from either CD, I think it was Colin de Grant home, where Jaddu basically, they didn't score a boundary, but they scored up to, they scored about 9 runs or something off singles and twos. And that felt to me and a lot of people around as a big pressure reliever, because at that, till that happened, everybody was, you know, signing off India completely. But then they scored 9 runs and people just breathed a little. Like the entire crowd just breathed a little. And then there was this Dole guy who, the drums guy who walked in right beside where I was sitting and started beating out the drums right at that point of time. And that got the crowd, you know, livened up a little bit, to liven up a little bit. Once that happened, they slowly started, you know, scoring 4 runs and over, 5 runs and over kind of thing. And the crowd then really got into it. And to come back to your CSK point, you know, there was a guy sitting right about 5 rows in front of me who had walked in wearing a CSK jersey, which is kind of silly, but when he walked in, he was standing there, and then he removed his jersey and he was using it sort of like an India flag kind of thing, which where he was just waving around the jersey all over, turning around. He was probably, you know, looking for somebody to take pictures or something. The crowd was kind of swooning to what he was doing, which is funny. I could see kind of clearly that Dhoni was intentionally taking a backseat, purposely not taking any risks. But the way Jaddu was batting was just magnificent. I mean, his timing was spot on right from ball one. He was, even the 6 that he hit, I think that was the first boundary shot in close to 9 or 10 overs. Where it was a very clean hit. It was just lovely to watch how Jaddu was batting. I don't think Jaddu has hit a half century in quite a while in one-day internationals. Correct me if I'm wrong, but this was just really, really good batting from what I could see live on the ground. I was messaging my friends while coming back that if you guys thought Jaddu was good on TV, on the ground it looked even better.
And in terms of the chase itself, I mean, having watched Indian cricket and IPL for a long time, was it something that you felt had a predictable pattern to it, the classic Dhoni chase, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, the slowly but surely you could see that they had a plan. Slowly but surely you could see that Dhoni was intent on, taking it deep. Dhoni being Dhoni, he had calculated. You could see that Dhoni was thinking to himself, we will play out bold. We will play out Santner. And if at all Jaddu holds out, or if at all Jaddu gets out, which would have been likely, and it did so happen, Dhoni knew that he would back himself to take on Nisham or whoever it was in the last 2 to 3 overs. That run out just, hit everybody's hearts. I think that was the turning point.
Yeah, the wind went out of the sails a bit right after that, and in fact, I even saw there were some pictures of there was a kid they showed who was crying. And was there quite emotional there at the end?
Yeah, while the chase was on, there were a lot of Indians. Being Indians, are quite superstitious. People, like the group around me, had multiple beers and ales and all of that. So folks needed to go to use the restroom, but the crowd around them basically said, you're not moving from here. You just need to sit down. So people were not allowed to go to the restrooms. People were not allowed to move. There was people standing in the back who were not allowed to come back to sit in their seats because everybody was just asked to stand where they were, sit where they were, just watch. Eventually when that run out happened, the reaction within the crowd was as you might have seen on screen. You could see that the wind had been let out, and it was I stepped out at that time to look outside, and a lot of people just started walking out at that time, probably to use a restroom, but a lot of people just started leaving, and you could see that people were downright miserable looking if you read their facial expressions.
Well, all right. So you seem to be, of course, totally fine at the end of it. Were you? Are you still feeling bad? How's your sort of your fandom index, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, good question. I'll try to be non-emotional about this. But I heard anecdotally from people that when people were walking out, there was a big group that was talking about Dhoni and saying that, what's the point, et cetera, et cetera. And it might have led to some verbal altercations right outside about, pro-Dhoni group saying, guys, come on. And the other guys who thought Dhoni was the reason why we lost the match, not being too happy about it. Nothing major happened. It was just a minor conversation, I think. But I came out, and then we were taking a shuttle out, and a couple of friends of mine, and they wanted to quickly do a conference call to kind of get the same debrief about from me and talk about what this means and so on and so forth. I'll be honest, it was a little bit emotional at that time, because the second the conversation turned to Dhoni and Dhoni not having done this in a long time and et cetera, I was like, guys, let's just give it 24 hours. Let's just give it some time before, taking this further, because it's too fresh for us to process. So it was heart-wrenching. It was gutting. It was not something that, it almost feels that a match that could have, if we had derailed completely, like what we did in the 2015, semi-final, where again Dhoni was there but he was not really going for it, that might have been a better conclusion than what actually happened.
Well, this way we got a great game, if not for the Indian victory. So I think that way this was a good one. Subhash, anything you want to ask Mithun or anything you want to add to this?
I mean, there's a comment. I can understand the defensive mechanism of a fan of any particular team, not just India, any particular team, because, you know, you get so emotionally invested in the course of the game that when it abruptly ends and you know the tournament is over for your side, whether it's a quarterfinal, semifinal, whichever game, you know, you kind of think, oh, I wish, you know, they had lost by 100 or something. That's more a defensive mechanism than the reality of the situation is that you have very highly skilled professional players, you know, with a lot of experience that are going to try to play the game the best way possible to get it close and stuff. So, you know, earlier on, Sid, you, me, Ashoka, and perhaps, you know, other friend of ours, we exchanged messages, and that was one of the theme I heard, and I've never understood that. You know, first of all, it's not like the players are changing their effort levels. They're playing, doing their best. And so if they got close, great. If they didn't get close, hey, you know, it didn't happen. So I find that interesting.
Yeah, but I think what Mithun's trying to say and what sometimes you feel is because at that moment, especially when you're watching, you're pretty invested in it to think about these things in such a calm manner, right? So it does, it's more the feeling rather than the rational part of you that kicks in there. It's like, oh, it's done. Oh my God, India are out of the World Cup. It's like, oh, it was, something was happening and then boom, over, gone. Obviously, you know, the game is going to end and one team is going to go out, all that. But I think it's more the feeling at that time.
I kind of felt this sort of thing when Afghanistan were playing Pakistan, when Bangladesh played New Zealand, even though that second game was, I mean, both, a lot of mistakes happened. Both teams made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, you pick a side and like, oh, here's the underdog. Then I do get the feeling why, you know, somebody feels empty. But, you know, like, oh, well, they tried and they got close, but it ends and it ends abruptly. You feel bad about it. But to be fair, I did feel that when Afghanistan couldn't close the deal and what's his name? Gulbuddin Naib had, you know, over to forget. I did feel that.
Ashoka?
Maybe it is just what the initial expectations were for me from the beginning of the World Cup. Because I do support India, Indian cricket team. And I thought, okay, we have a squad that is good for semifinals. After that, all bets are off. No matter what the opposition is and no matter what it is. After that, all bets are off. It was the same thing that I had even in the 2015 World Cup. Because at the semifinal and finals, it is just sudden death. It is just that one day and that particular moment in time, what happens, who pulls it off and all that. Like 2015, South Africa, they were fantastic. Grant Elliott pulled it off on that day. I mean, these things happen. So I was not that pissed off. And even in this match, right? I mean, this is not a match where too many mistakes were made. I mean, you can argue one or two tactical points, but the bowling was outstanding and the conditions favored bowling all through the match. There were very less that the batsmen can do. They can either stall and hope for one good over, one or two good overs. If I can look back, I think there were like five bad overs or six bad overs throughout the entire 100 or 99.3 overs. So that is like an outstanding quality maintained all through the match. And credit to India for bringing it out from some hopeless situation. 70 for 5, 92 for 6 and 92 for 6 in 30 overs. I was generally pleased that the match got so close. Of course, there is disappointment when that run out happened. Like, when I saw it, I mean, just before, I was watching it on a TV. So just before the replays were there, that fraction of a second, I was like, oh, shit, this is bad. So, and just before that ball, I think Dhoni hits a six, if I remember right. So I was like, yeah, maybe this is done. But that feeling was always there that we were living by, as Subhash was saying, India was living by a strand or a thread or whatever it is. So they were hanging in there just about to give themselves a chance. And I mean, all of us in this call have lived through the 90s, right? Like, this was never the case. This is not the first World Cup we are watching. We are watching right from 92, 96, or some of us from 87 onwards. This was never the case. I mean, we would have all been mentally like switched off by the time it was 92 for six. So all of this is, I am enjoying it as a novelty. I am seeing this as some golden new thing. Some new feelings are coming in that, wow, we are still in the game. How are we still in the game?
And the thing about the bowling is crucial, because this game was played over 2 days. It almost feels like two games at some level. But if you look back yesterday at India's bowling, especially when New Zealand were going at that strike rate, you know, the the expectation was that maybe they don't have enough. But, you know, it is only when the second side comes in, and this was in the next day. It wasn't even in the same day. I mean, one can only imagine how it would have been if India had batted yesterday afternoon. But even on the next day, with the sun out and everything, I mean, it's still very difficult. And then the bowling is of high quality. And so through that, to actually get so close, I think, you know, it's a fine game. Fine game. Right, Subhash?
Yeah, of course. The quality of bowling was great. And I thought, New Zealand, especially the class of Kane Williamson, trying to weather the early storm so that they can put a reasonable total on the board, and considering how the pitches have behaved, where batting second has been difficult, it gets slower and then you can bowl cutters. I thought he and Ross Taylor assessed the conditions really well. I mean, New Zealand are known to read the pitches really well. Every opportunity he gets, Siddharth Munga mentions that, you know, in podcasts and pieces and whatnot. And they are really good at assessing conditions. How? I don't know. But they are. And once Guptill got out, and then the bowling was good and it was difficult to score runs, they were willing to play the long game, stay in the game as long as possible. And then since you're batting first, if you save your resources, you could score a bunch of runs. And in the end, what? They ended up scoring six runs and over for the last, averaging it out, last 20 overs or something, right? Once they put the score on the board, and then once you break the back, Rohit Sharma couldn't have done much with the ball he got. The previous two deliveries came in. This one from the same line and length, pitched and seamed out, you're done. Whereas Kohli was overthinking the game there against Bolt, thinking that, you know, Bolt is going to take him off by pushing the ball across him, that's how he's going to get the wicket. And he was willing to protect that while exposing the inside edge of the bat. And Bolt is good enough that to bowl two balls slanting across and a third one to bring in, and it's too late. Once that was broken...
Reminded me of some of the test dismissals, you know, the famous Philander dismissal from last year, I think, if I'm not mistaken, that was in Cape Town, right? When he got that Indaka LB, and there was also a similar one in England where he got LB. So it was like a test match, a field that Williamson had set for him, and then Bolt took two away and brought the third one in.
I mean, I think that's where he was trying to hedge the bets, saying that I'm good enough to get bat on ball that is in line with the stumps. But then if you look at the shot, you know, his head was so far outside the line of the ball that he was batting, the bat was coming around the pad. There was no way he was going to be able to catch up somebody bowling at like 130, 135 kilometers an hour.
Given that dismissal as well, this was again a game of very, very fine margins, right? Like,
yeah,
he could have made contact with it. And even if you take that dismissal only, right, it is a very, I mean, it's an umpire's call at the end of it. So the one dismissal I had problems with was Lokesh Rahul.
It was awful.
It was bad. But even then you move to DK and say Pant. DK has not been tested. I mean, he has like what, five runs or four runs in this tournament? Hardly even that. Pant has like 50 runs. Like, you are asking these two batsmen now to get India across. You're trusting these two people who have not been in a World Cup semi-final before to push them to towards victory, and that's tough.
So, but that's the thing that we discussed too, right, through the tournament. I mean, this is the first game in which both Kohli and Rohit ended up falling for cheap scores. And we were talking about how India prepares for that eventuality. I mean, do they try and send, Pandya or Pant or someone up the order in some game? Or do they rest? How do they work that out? And it so happened that when it reached the semi-final, they got into that situation. And then then they fell short, right? I mean,
yeah,
how does a team
get materialized? Yeah,
yeah, exactly. How does a team prepare for this eventuality unless it finds itself in such eventuality in the first place? And even then, even if it does find itself, I mean, say against, take any team, South Africa, say, okay, Rabada had that great spell and suppose Rohit fell early. And then even if, say, somebody like, I don't know, Vijay Shankar was playing then, but even if Pandya had come up with, say, 80, does it mean that it prepares him to do the same in the semi-final? I'm not sure.
I think India came in with a particular approach. You know, every team has an approach that they want to employ when they come to a tournament of this magnitude, right? India had a particular approach, thrown completely off kilter because Shikhar Dhawan got hurt. No fault of his. And that means they had to take somebody they thought we're going to put at four, put open, and then it has a knock-on effect on everybody. You know, there is no way to say that, you know, oh, we'll give these guys chance to try themselves out. That doesn't mean, as you said, Sid, anything really. And to be fair, you know, Rishabh Pant got 32, Pandya got 32, Dhoni got a 50, Jadeja got a spectacular 77. So by all means, that low runner actually did produce the runs. But it just wasn't enough. Once again, then you have to go back to see that if your top three, these are your top three scoring batsmen of the tournament, 600, 450, and 200 something or 300 for KL. And between them, they produced three runs. That's just too much to bridge, even with Pant, Pandya, Dhoni, Jadeja having once in a 5-year kind of innings. It's not going to happen.
And you also have a spectacular catch by Jimmy Neesham, and you have a spectacular run out by Guptill to sort of factor in.
But in addition to that, there was also something that, you know, Santana, as well as he bowled, the batsmen were keen on playing him out, and then the moment they took a chance, it went to hand. You know, yeah, you could say Ross Taylor also tried to take chances, but it kept eluding the fielders. It kept falling in no man's land. Sometimes stars are not exactly aligned the way you want and it doesn't happen. You know, these are two semi-finalists and really good teams. If you have these marginal things happening, stacking up one direction, it's very hard to overcome that.
Yeah, and we had, apart from the Guptill run out, we also had another directed, Jadeja's directed earlier this morning. And, we have to talk about him. I mean, yesterday with the ball, of course, he's just played two games in this World Cup. He comes into the team, has that spell with the ball, gets that lovely bold dismissal. And then he's, of course, electric in the field. And then... with the bat, I don't really remember the last time that I have seen Jadeja in an ODI play such an innings. Have any of you? I mean, is this like his greatest one-day innings?
No, I remember one Jadeja innings where India were, again, in a very hopeless situation. I think it was played in New Zealand. Very high score, flat wicket. India had a large bunch of wickets. First, he puts on a partnership with Dhoni and then he puts on a partnership with Ashwin. I think they tie the game. I think that's the last time I remember Jadeja having such a, you know, dramatic knock other than the warm-up game against New Zealand where he scored a 50.
Yeah, but if you see the last 1 year, he has been quite solid with the bat. I mean, you have to... unfortunately look at tests for that. Like the 100 that he made against the West Indies was not a crash bang 100. It was a proper 100 where he settled and made runs like a top order bat. And that has been the case for some time, that he has been dependable. Maybe we can say that it was not, I mean, the management must have recognized that sooner and or should have strategically sent him a little bit higher or pushed one down. I don't know. It was a weird call anyways, because I thought that given that India were 5 for 3 and given that how Dhoni is risk averse and solid, maybe he should have come up higher. So that is the one or two things that I can think about that we could have done different. And going back even, sorry that I moved away from Jadeja, but going back even further, I mean, Kuldeep would have been a better choice than Chahal today, because that one over of 18 where he gave two dollies to, or two really bad balls to Grandhomme, where he could actually strike. I think Grandhomme only takes him for 14 out of those 18 runs. Whereas Jadeja was brilliant. He kept it very, I mean, he didn't try nothing fancy. He just kept it straight. And if the ball turned, yes, fine. And in the field, he was good. And today's batting, of course, probably innings of his lifetime. Probably. I don't know how he's going to top that. Maybe in 2023, he'll come and win us the final. But that's just speculation. Till now, this is his best innings across formats.
Talking about risk, I want to, I mean, of course, this will be discussed threadbare over the next few days. But was that the best option that Dhoni and Jadeja had at that moment? I mean, was there a option to accelerate earlier? Did they have to take it till the end? Because we know historically Dhoni does this. He takes it to the end. He targets that bowler. Then whenever that, either it's the penultimate over, usually it's the last over, he keeps the certain scores. Is that the best way to go about this? By eliminating all risk early on and keeping the all risks for later?
Right. So now, see, if you're 92 for 6 in 30, and it's Jadeja, Bhuvi, and the tail that is going to follow. And Bhuvi is not going to be the person you're going to trust to accelerate. Now, you have three options to start with. That is, you don't lose a wicket, and you don't try to get a partner out, or you try to make the best possible outcome for a ball that is safely played for a single as long as possible. It is also a factor of who's the fifth bowler for the opposition as well. So that comes into picture. How much overs does a De Grandhomme or a Neesham has that you can safely target? And what is the asking rate? 7.4 is not that steep a target for people to go crazy in this day and age. Like, I would agree to it if it was 9 or 10, like we had to hit 200 of 20 overs. Then, of course, it makes sense. But 148 in 20 overs, with only 4 wickets in hand, you don't really have to push it till it goes till 9. And that is where I think Jadeja was brilliant. Like, he did take those risks and it did come off. And those didn't look like shaky shots, the top edges to 4 and stuff. Like, those were clean hits. So he played that innings. Once Dhoni got the sense of, yes, the partner, his partner is going at 130 strike rate, why would then he do the same thing and risk, I mean, take another risk from another end when he knows that the tail is following him? Better off than take a single, go back to at the other end and let Jadeja do his thing. And I think he did that pretty well. Sorry to sound slightly controversial, I think this is Dhoni's best innings in this World Cup. He did make a 56 of 61 against the West Indies. I thought this he played even better. He played the odds that were given to him. He played it perfectly. Unfortunately, Jadeja got out. And they made victory look like a possibility when it was, as Subhash was saying, it wasn't. 92 for 6, match is mostly done. We pulled it because of risk avoidance from Dhoni and very good risk taking by Jadeja. And it came off.
And also, we need to talk about the fact that Williamson held back that Neesham over right till the end, right? He didn't get it out of the way and keep, say, Ferguson and Bolt for the end.
Yeah, it was a typical IPL CSK game, right? Like, Dhoni waits for the Mohammad Siraj over. And, I mean, all
all due credit to Nisham, he's not a Bolt. He's not going to like bowl yorkers at will. He's going to bowl that one or two odd slow bouncer or say a wide yorker. He's going to attempt that and he's going to miss it by some few millimeters. And that's the confidence that Tony has that, okay, let me reduce this to me and Nisham. 18, 20, okay, fine. That is what I'm aiming for. Like, let's say even 25 of six balls with Nisham, I'll take that odds. I mean, that is essentially was what Dhoni was doing. And you could see that because you've seen this so many times in the IPL.
Okay, so looking at the bigger picture though, probably ask Subhash this. It's India in, is, have had a few sort of defeats and knockouts over the last few tournaments. Is it just something that happens or should we get into the narrative of India being the new chokers?
I mean, if they were chokers, they wouldn't have got... I mean, what is a choker? It's shit happens. So somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. And it's not... First of all, the way choking is defined in sporting aspect is that you had an opportunity to win and at the threshold of victory, you blew it. That's choking. For half the game, India weren't in the game. So I don't know how you call this choking.
Yeah. I was just needling you with narrative, which I know you find very irritating.
I mean, the game that Afghanistan lost to India, you can say Afghanistan choked. You could say the game that Afghanistan lost to Pakistan.
Pakistan, yes.
That definitely it would be a classic case of choking. Even though Pakistan is the overall better team and all that. But I think one of those days, it happens. Happens more often, or seems to anyway, happen more often than what Indian fans could digest. I mean, Indian fans should be very happy that this collection of players in the last few years, that's the best collection of ODI players, with all due respect to Sachin Tendulkar. He's obviously the greatest, but collection of players, pound for pound, this team will have the 1990s and early 2000s team for a lunch, breakfast, dinner, everything. Such a solid team.
And even in the last 2015 World Cup, they went through the league phase undefeated.
Yeah.
And they went through the league phase undefeated with a bowling attack far, far inferior to this one.
Mohit Sharma, Umesh
Yadav,
Ashwin.
Exactly. And now you have, in 4 years, you have a Jasprit Bumrah, who is the best, one of the best in the world and is probably on his way to becoming one of the best Indian bowlers ever, if not, on the global stage. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you have options like Bhuvneshwar, Shami, and then the two spinners. And you have a player like Jadeja who gets two games in the World Cup. I mean, a player like Jadeja will probably walk into 8 out of the 10 world sides.
The only team that I cannot see Jadeja getting in is England. Every other team he gets in, walks in.
Yeah, I was thinking England and Australia, but he probably even walks into Australia.
Oh, Australia definitely walks in.
No, choking was a joke, which I was trying to needle Subhash. But I was talking about the fact that since 2014, if you look at two World T20s and two World Cups and the Champions Trophy and maybe like, I don't know if there are other tournaments, but they've gone to the knockouts and not pulled it off. So, of course, I wouldn't call it choking because choking is, a different term, but not being able to finish... not being able to clinch the title, whatever word you want to use that.
Let me say something, right? So I'm looking at Twitter feed of Kartikeya. He's put a thing from Cricket Info there. From 2010, January 1st to now, basically performances in, so in the last 9 years, performances in Champions Trophy, World Cup, India has played 30 matches and won 23, lost 6. Nobody's even in the same zip code. Second best is New Zealand. they played, they won 14 games and lost 10. That's ratio 1.4. India is going at a ratio of 3.83 win to loss. So to think of, you know,
but India, that's consistency.
Consistency.
That's consistency. That, yeah, that is not.
But at the beginning of a tournament, if you say, if you see these records and say a 3.83 team is more often than not going to win it. So we are talking from a different, I mean, we are shifting goalposts when it comes to semifinals and finals. The one game that we lose, if it happens to be semifinal, so be it, fine. So we are sad, we are disappointed that we couldn't go on to make the finals, or even in the finals, if we lose, we are disappointed that we are not able to get the title. But to get to that place, it requires enormous amount of talent and consistency and...
needless to say.
Yeah.
Needless to say. I think the point maybe that Sid V was making was, had this game happened in the league phase, would India have pulled it through? Right? So that's the question that was probably worth exploring, not the other way around. Had this happened,
if this game happened in the league stage exactly as it happened, we would have lost by 18 runs.
Okay.
I think that is a correct assessment. I mean,
you're saying India would have approached the league game exactly the way they would have approached the semifinal, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I don't see how suddenly they would change how they play cricket.
No, not how they play cricket, but the factor of it being a knockout is not something that is going to come into consideration with them.
Yeah, man. I feel very bad about the person I'm going to agree with. I think I'm going to agree with Ravi Shastri when he says that this team is quite special. And it makes me feel bad inside. But anyways, I didn't expect that I would be in saying these sentences. But anyways, I think this team is quite special. It is a phenomenal team. It has a wealth of bowling riches and batting, and it should win 7 or 8 if it's shown that it wins 8 out of 10 matches. No way why should they should change that approach suddenly for a semi-final or a final, thinking, oh, let's do the funky. Why? It has worked for you 80% of the time. Why are you discarding it? It is not rational to think that way.
Fair enough. And so moving on to the finals, New Zealand are now in the finals and will play either England or Australia.
England.
Okay, so that is your prediction?
Sorry.
England. I was going to go around and ask for predictions, by the way, and see and ask if...
If you can predict a coin flip, then I'll say you should predict it. Because it's remarkable the amount of... benefit of winning the toss and batting first in this tournament. Initially there were some captains that chose to bat second and stuff, but it's been very hard to score anything about 250 while chasing, even though in this case it was less than 250. It's been remarkable how kind of consistent that has been, that you win toss, you bat first, you put a total on the board and then watch the ball get slower. And then see the opponents struggle with timing the ball against the slower bounces. So who is going to win the toss at Edgbaston? Bats first and wins the game. Same thing is going to happen at Lords as well. Whoever wins the toss is going to win the game.
But I think, anyway, at the end of it all, Australia is going to win another World Cup, and then
we'll all stop watching cricket for the next 30. Fuck this, dude. Seriously.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Mithun. Thanks, man, for joining in last minute notice, and enjoy tomorrow.
Thank you. Lovely being here.
All right. Thanks, Subhash. Thanks, Ashok.
Thanks,
man. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the 81 All Out podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever else you prefer. It would be wonderful if we could leave a rating and a review so that more people find us. You can also follow us on Twitter at 81allout and check out all our previous podcasts and articles on our website, 81allout.com. In case you're still listening, here's a shout out to our sister podcast on regional movies, whereistheotherbanana.com. You can follow them on Twitter at theotherbanana and watch out for updates on all the movie reviews and discussions that they put out. As always, We would love to hear your thoughts on the work we do. So please send us your feedback. Goodbye.
In the air, Srishant takes it. India wins. He'll come back for the second. India have won the test match. India have won the series. They're going to get back for two. India home. Launch goes wide.